Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And today on Class Matters, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the big influencers, how corporations, with the collaboration of the deep state, the intelligence agencies, etc., are controlling the information that you get to hear and read, the so-called news that you consume and that you are regularly presented with. But before we dive into that, our main articles, we wanted to mention a couple of things that we're not going to get to, kind of following up on some recent programs. At Racket News, that's the Matt Taibbi website, racketnews.com, as well as on Michael Schellenberger's website, a few other websites, there is a great article on the censorship industrial complex that we've been talking about. And it's entitled Top 50 Organizations to Know in the Censorship Industrial Complex. It's a comprehensive article. It has like 8 or 10 different authors in it. They all work together on this thing. It's pretty big. It's a little bit too big and gets too much into the weeds for this program. It's kind of like us reading a book or something. So we probably won't directly cover it, but it is a great resource on this topic, and we did want to recommend it. Secondly, kind of following up on what we talked about last week when we did a program on Syria and Somalia, journalist Aaron Mate at his website, mate.substack.com, has a great article talking about how Syria was recently readmitted into the Arab League. So there is kind of a rapprochement going on with Saudi Arabia and Oman and the other countries.
Everybody but Qatar.
Yeah. So that's kind of a big step. It represents yet another instance of countries pushing back against U.S. dominance.
Ooh, and the U.S. had a high-speed come-apart snit fit.
Yeah.
Big time. How dare you make peace with Syria?
Indeed. So what Mate's piece focuses in on is not just the fact that they rejoined the Arab League, but the U.S. response to that, U.S. government response, which of course was to double down on sanctions. So the stark imposition of cruelty on the people of Syria is just mind-numbing. And Aaron Mate, to his credit, documents this very well in his recent article.
Yeah, the sanctions are bad enough, but literally stealing their oil and their wheat.
Yeah,
I mean, that is so low. It's worse than stealing candy from a baby, because candy isn't really good for babies. But stealing wheat from babies and children and citizens, their own wheat, that's low.
Yeah, it is. But our main topic today, we wanted to horn in on two, possibly three articles. We probably won't get to all three. But journalist Li Fang, who recently left The Intercept to join the Substack revolution, has really been on a tear lately with some great exposés, and we wanted to share some of them with you. And it's easy to remember how to find Li Fang. It's lifang.com. So it's real easy to find his stuff there. And again, as with a lot of the Substacks, you may go to a page where it says subscribe first, and you just hit the thing that says no thanks, and you're allowed to preview the articles while you decide if you want to subscribe. This first one is entitled, Pfizer Quietly Financed Groups Lobbying for COVID Vaccine Mandates. In the midst of a contentious debate about Chicago's plan to force employers to require their workers to take the COVID-19 vaccine, Karen Freeman Wilson, president of the Chicago Urban League, appeared on television to dismiss complaints that such rules would disproportionately harm the Black community. The health and safety factor here far outweighs the concern about shutting people out or creating a barrier, Freeman Wilson said on WTTW in August 2021. That's the PBS affiliate in Chicago. Earlier that year, however, her group had received a $100,000 grant from Pfizer, the manufacturer of one of the most commonly used COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, for a project to promote vaccine safety and effectiveness. That's the quote. Although the Chicago Urban League is not normally shy about disclosing its corporate donors, the support from Pfizer is not listed in the partner section on the website.
How convenient.
Yeah, exactly. The drug industry funding likewise went unmentioned during the interview. So right away, I mean, this is very surprising to me. You figured that Pfizer would spend some money on advertising and promotion and so on.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't advertise directly because it was emergency authorized use only.
Right.
You see drugs for Pfizer advertised all over the place.
Right.
But that one, they couldn't because of the way the law's written. So instead, they paid other people to promote it for them. And it worked very well. I mean, I couldn't tell the difference between Pfizer directly and Pfizer indirectly, right? We saw it everywhere.
Yeah, there was so much promotion of that. This is kind of shedding a light on all this that was going on, unbeknownst to most of the public. Pfizer's grant to the Chicago Urban League was one of many that Pfizer made to nonprofits and trade organizations. Pfizer doled out special funding to groups across the country that lobbied in favor of government policies to mandate the COVID-19 vaccine.
Nothing like a captive audience, as they say.
Yeah.
I mean, if you literally force people to get injected or they lose their job, they can't travel, they can't see their families.
Yeah.
That's pretty coercive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it certainly
is. And then to pay people to say, no, it's not coercive. It's good. It's good for you.
Yeah, that's right. The extensive list of those with funding from the pharmaceutical giant includes consumer, doctor, and medical groups, as well as public health organizations and civil rights nonprofits. Many of these groups did not disclose the funding they received from Pfizer while they were advocating for policies that would force workers to get the vaccine. There were several different and sometimes overlapping vaccine mandates in the country. At the federal level, President Joe Biden issued an executive order, which was ultimately struck down in court, mandating vaccinations at all employers with 100 workers or more. A number of state and local governments forced public employees to get vaccinated and tried to force private sector employers to follow suit. And many large employers required their employees to get vaccinated without any prodding from the government. Critics of these employer mandates have noted that the majority of the proposed mandates, including Biden's, made no exception for individuals with natural immunity through prior infection. Proponents of the mandates claims that the vaccines would prevent transmission of COVID-19, an argument that lacks sound scientific basis at the time and has further unraveled, to say the least.
It's been proven wrong, but they said it. Yeah, virus stops here. It stops with you. If you get vaccinated, the virus, it just can't go any further. This is how we stop the pandemic. Everybody gets vaccinated, and then you can't get it, and you can't spread it.
Yeah, except
that's
it wasn't
what they
true.
Said.
Right.
Well, yeah, it was a lie.
Yeah.
But they got paid to say it.
Oh, that's right. You're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations, Biden falsely claimed in July 2021.
He lied.
As his administration and local governments were preparing mandate orders. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, similarly stated that vaccinated individuals, quote, do not carry the virus, also false. But it wasn't just these unsupported claims by leading government officials that shaped the groundwork for COVID-19 mandates. A coalition of highly visible groups backed by Pfizer and the pharmaceutical industry provided much of the lobbying support for coercive vaccine policies. Here are the most important examples. First, the National Consumers League, a century-old corporate watchdog group, announced support for government and employer mandates requiring COVID-19 vaccination in August 2021, during roughly the same period in which it accepted $75,000 from Pfizer earmarked for vaccine policy efforts.
So they threw 100 years of goodwill down the drain for $75,000.
Yep, that's right.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, that's right. The organization is also led in part by Andrea LaRue, who serves as an NCL board member. LaRue's work as a highly paid contract lobbyist to Pfizer, focused on vaccine policy, is not disclosed by NCL's website.
Why would they put a corporate lobbyist on a consumer's organization?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
in the first place.
Yeah.
Maybe they went down the tubes before this and we just didn't know.
I suspect that's correct. Second example, the Immunization Partnership, a Houston-based public health nonprofit, lobbied publicly against Texas legislation in 2021 designed to prevent vaccine passports and municipal vaccine mandates. The Immunization Partnership claimed that the bills erode the vital role of our state's public health and medical experts in combating this pandemic. The partnership did not disclose that it received $35,000 from Pfizer that year for, quote-unquote, legislative advocacy. Third example, the American Pharmacists Association, American College of Preventative Medicine, Academy of Managed Care Pharmacy, American Society for Clinical Pathology, and the American College of Emergency Physicians all signed a letter in support of the Biden administration mandate to require employers with 100 or more employees to require their employees to be fully vaccinated or tested at least weekly. The organizations all received individual grants from Pfizer. Another example, the National Hispanic Medical Association worked with public relations firm Culture One World to distribute press release and media placements that called on employers of essential workers to mandate COVID-19 vaccines. The group also signed on to joint statements lobbying in favor of the Biden administration vaccine mandate. The NHMA received $30,000 from Bio, a vaccine industry lobby group that represents Pfizer and Moderna, IRS filing show. And another example, final one he gives, the American Academy of Pediatrics was one of the most visible organizations working to build public support for vaccine mandates. The organization received multiple specialized grants from Pfizer in 2021. Pfizer also provided grants to individual state chapters of the AAP earmarked for lobbying on vaccine policy. The Ohio AAP chapter, for instance, lobbied the Ohio legislature against bills to curb coercive COVID-19 vaccine policies while receiving an immunization legislation advocacy grant from Pfizer.
That's disgusting. How many kids died because of that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know the death rate in children is not high. It's practically zero for the actual sickness, though. That's
right.
The important part. And the vaccine death rate is low, but as they say, even if one death is too many. But not when it comes to the vaccines. You know what? Just compare those dead kids to all the millions that aren't dead.
Yeah.
Who's complaining about a few kids here and there? That's not right. We got a grant from Pfizer.
Yeah. And Stephen Kirsch, most prominently, has even pointed out in a recent column that to date, there is no study. There's not any kind of peer-reviewed study, no kind of study at all that really documents how the vaccine has achieved the safety level of less than 1 per million. Anything more than 1 in a million is not considered a safe vaccine. And yet...
Oh, the rate is much higher than
that. It is much higher. Anyway.
But that's okay. The pediatric group got a grant. So, hey, who cares about the kids?
Yeah. The pharmaceutical industry remained largely in the background on these controversial mandate policies, which faced opposition from a broad array of civil libertarians, labor unions, and community-based groups.
And people who care about their health.
Yeah. Instead, the industry mobilized support for the mandates through third-party organizations to which it typically provided financial support. Pfizer and most of the organizations funded by the pharmaceutical giant listed above did not respond to a request for comment.
We don't have to talk to you. We have the media under our control.
That's right. The American College of Preventive Medicine noted in an email that the group endorsed the COVID-19 vaccine mandate after the policy was brought to the organization's board. Regarding the specific question about the COVID-19 vaccine, supporting a vaccine mandate does not support one vaccine manufacturer over another, said Drew Wallace, a spokesperson for the American College of Preventive Medicine. Critics note that drug industry money presents an inherent conflict of interest that shaped the discourse around COVID-19 mandates.
Wait, that guy said that they weren't bribed because Pfizer gave them money, but they didn't specify Pfizer in the mandate.
Right, yeah, exactly. That was their response.
Well, that's some real quality proof right there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we didn't discriminate between the companies. If people or institutions advocated for or implemented mandates while failing to disclose ties to the vaccine companies, that is a serious ethical violation and potentially even unlawful and should be thoroughly investigated, said Janine Younes, an attorney formerly with the New Civil Liberties Alliance, who brought some of the first legal challenges to vaccine mandates.
It should be illegal.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's not illegal, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
You don't live in a country with the rule of law.
Yeah. Dr. Aaron Cariotti, an expert in bioethics, noted that pharmaceutical firms routinely finance outside organizations to shape medical decisions and healthcare policy. Pfizer, Cariotti said, engaged in a form of market manipulation by pushing mandates using organizations that present themselves as scientifically credible or acting in the public interest, while creating by force a market for the company's products. Pharmaceutical companies spend very large portions of their budgets on marketing, including on various healthcare organizations and third parties, and they do that because they get a return on that investment. It makes business sense, Cariotti noted. The pharmaceutical industry has long shaped healthcare policy through outside advocacy organizations. The late Evan Morris, a former lobbyist for Genentech, famously once presided over a $50 million lobbying budget, much of which went to third-party groups that amplified the pharmaceutical giant's messages. In one particularly lucrative coup, Morris used outside groups to stoke fears and plant news stories around avian flu, remember that, bird flu scare, and the need for the government to stockpile Tamiflu.
It's an anti-flu drug, which okay. I always thought was the stupidest name ever. It sounds like a Southern girl.
Right,
Tamiflu. You want some Tamiflu? It's good for your virus.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that a good Southern accent?
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I always thought that was silly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, they even admitted when the little detail man would come and tell you how wonderful it was, they actually would hand you out stuff. You know, the brochures at the same time they're talking to you and giving you free pizza.
Right.
And telling you how good it is. And I would sit there and, you know, I read when I eat. I'd sit there and read it and go, hey, you know what? It says right here it doesn't work. Oh, and the other So anyhow, in the literature they handed you would point out it didn't work. And I guess that's why in this so-called COVID vaccine,
right,
the inserts I have heard were blank. They didn't hand out any literature. Well, they did, but it was blank.
I remember that, actually. Yeah,
that would read it and go, wait a minute, this doesn't work, you know?
But
Tamiflu, poof.
This public relations tactic reportedly helped generate hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for Genentech parent company Roche, which manufactures Tamiflu. On another occasion, Morris orchestrated a delay in the Food and Drug Administration's decision to ban the use of the cancer drug Avastin, then one of Genentech's most profitable products. The FDA had determined that Avastin was ineffective in treating breast cancer, but Smith mobilized outside advocacy groups to pressure the agency to reconsider its decision, according to the Wall Street Journal. Efforts by other controversial drug makers to employ similar strategies have been well documented. For example, Purdue Pharma covertly funded third-party advocacy groups to encourage looser criteria for prescribing OxyContin and other highly addictive opioid painkillers. In the case of Pfizer, the company was able to mobilize widespread support among policymakers to make its COVID-19 vaccine one of the most profitable medical products in history. In 2021 alone, Pfizer generated over $36.7 billion in revenue from the vaccine. From a public health perspective, the vaccine mandates did not make any sense for a couple of reasons, said Dr. Martin Kulldorff, a professor of medicine on leave from Harvard University. One is that if you had COVID, then you have excellent immunity, Kulldorff said. The second is that back in 2021, when there was a shortage of vaccines, the most important thing was to vaccinate older, high-risk Americans, and also in other parts of the world like India and Brazil, but instead a lot of the vaccines went to younger people who are low-risk and didn't need it. Of course, nobody actually needs it, but that's another story.
And also by then there was widespread immunity.
Yeah.
Because I remember I actually saved a screenshot of a researcher for AstraZeneca. Is that the one in Britain, right?
Yeah.
And this was like in May 2020, you know, when already there weren't as many people as sick. Like the COVID thing was basically a February, March, April kind of illness, right? That's when most people died and all that.
Right.
And then after that, once spring came, like in every other respiratory viral disease, it started to drop off. So this researcher was actually quoted in May of 2021 going, this is a race against time because we have to come up with the vaccine before everyone's immune already.
Right.
Kind of pointing out that we can't make any money if it's a worthless vaccine, but they just fixed that problem by just lying and going, oh no, you need it even if you've already had the disease.
Yeah.
Because your immune system doesn't work if you've actually had the disease, but it totally works if you take our shot.
Yeah,
that was their line.
Yeah.
People actually believe that.
I know. Yeah, it's crazy.
The
Biden administration later faced a string of rulings from federal courts declaring the mandate unconstitutional. The Supreme Court in January 2022 overturned the OSHA requirement that mandated workers at businesses with 100 or more employees receive COVID-19 vaccinations, but left in place mandates for workers in medical facilities.
That's so evil.
It is.
Why do they pick on doctors and nurses?
Yeah.
I mean, doctors and nurses by that time were pretty much immune.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they worked all through 2020. Surely they were exposed to it by then.
Yeah.
It's just so evil.
Workers affected by other COVID-19 vaccine mandates weren't so lucky. New York City terminated more than 1,700 members of its municipal workforce for their refusal to comply with a vaccine mandate that took effect in October 2021. This year, the city ended its vaccine mandate, but many of the fired workers are still fighting to get their jobs back in court. Cariotti, the bioethicist, was fired from the University of California Irvine School of Medicine for refusing to comply with the university's vaccine mandate, claiming natural immunity from prior infection. He is one of thousands of people fired because of similar policies.
And a medical school doesn't know what natural immunity is.
Yeah, I know.
That just shows it's about the money. It's not about the medicine. It's not about the science.
Yeah.
Every doctor, every nurse should know what natural immunity is.
Yeah.
Even Fauci was talking about it before they came up with the vaccine.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So everyone should know what it is. And if they don't, it's because they're being paid not to know. This is what Upton Sinclair said. It's hard to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. That is primo evidence right there.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little bit more to the article, but we want to turn now to another article by Li Fang. And this is kind of getting more into the deep state side of things. This is from May 12th, and it's entitled FBI Surveillance Contractor Probed Anti-Vaccine Mandate Activists. Flashpoint, a surveillance contractor, started as a business that trawled message boards and chat rooms associated with Al-Qaeda and ISIS, collecting information that they sold to the Federal Bureau of Investigation during the height of the war on terror. These days, the firm, still under contract with the FBI and other clients, monitors the internet activity of domestic American activists protesting pipelines and COVID-19 vaccine mandates. In a presentation for clients last year, Flashpoint analyst Vlad Cuajulio demonstrated his company's methods for identifying and entering Telegram chat groups. Cuajulio walked through previous efforts to join chat rooms associated with transportation workers opposed to coercive COVID-19 vaccine mandates. In this case, we're searching for a closed channel of U.S. Freedom Flyers, said Cuajulio. It's basically a group that opposed vaccination and masks. As he clicked through a database, Cuajulio showed a chat group on Telegram sponsored by Airline Professionals for Justice, another group formed by airline industry workers opposed to the mandate. The forum, he added, provided useful insights, including Zoom links for meetings of the grassroots organization.
It's actually illegal for airline pilots to take a new drug.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to take any drug that's less than 5 years old or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, because, of course, it's because if it's only been around for less than 5 years, the chances of it having harmful side effects, we don't really know. Even if it went through FDA the approval of the old kind, right?
Right, right.
But this two-month thing, this farce of a trial that they went through in 2020, two months, and then they approved it.
Yeah.
So that it's actually illegal for the airline pilots to take it, let alone for the airline companies to force them to take it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But laws don't matter, I guess, when it comes to money.
Yes. Private chats, said Cuajulio, require for you to have an invite link, which he noted can often either be found by scrolling through public forums or by engaging the administrator of that channel. Flashpoint boasts advanced artificial intelligence and scraping tools, along with teams of analysts focused on infiltrating online communities. The company, with offices in Virginia, Washington, D.C., and New York, declined an opportunity to comment for this story. The firm is a prominent player in the threat intelligence industry, that being in quotes, a subset of surveillance.
Because it's Orwellian.
Yeah, it is. A subset of surveillance contractors that specialize in penetrating closed online forums and chat rooms, often through the creation of fake internet personas.
Although intelligence is a threat to our ruling overlords, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
A big threat.
Yeah, so
they like people stupid.
So, you know, first of all, why is the FBI, in this case indirectly, but why is the FBI involved in monitoring and surveilling the lawful protest activity and discussion groups, et cetera, of U.S. citizens, you know, who happen to be maybe promoting policies that the administration disagrees with, but that's your First Amendment right to do that.
Yeah, so the FBI should not be involved at all.
Right, and maybe they don't do it directly, but it's no less illegal and unethical if they're just
unconstitutional
contracting it out.
Yeah.
And that appears to be what they're doing
here.
Yeah,
public-private partnership.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no crime like a public-private crime.
Yeah. The Flashpoint webinar provides a window into the forces shaping the intensive lobbying efforts around the 2021 mandate. That year, President Joe Biden released a rule mandating COVID vaccinations for all employers with 100 workers or more. Before the mandate was ultimately struck down by the courts, thousands of workers around the country were fired because of the policy.
And others died because they've submitted.
Yeah, that's right. Transportation industry workers, including pilots and flight attendants, were among the most vocal opponents of the mandate. As essential employees, they worked during the early days of the pandemic and were among the first to become infected by the virus and recover.
Exactly. That was my point about the medical ones, too.
Yeah, yeah. Many of them reasoned, why do I need the vaccine if I've already had COVID? I'm not getting much benefit, which struck me as reasonable, said Dr. J. Bhattacharya, a professor of medicine at Stanford University who served as an expert witness in a lawsuit filed by United Airways pilots against the airline's vaccine mandate policy. The scientific fact is that the vaccine never stopped transmission of the disease, added Bhattacharya.
So if they're already immune, it doesn't make any sense to get it. And in the second place, if they weren't, taking the vaccine doesn't do anything. It doesn't stop you from getting it. It doesn't stop you from transmitting it.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no reason to have a mandate in the first place. And in the second place, there should never be a mandate because that's against your Nuremberg rights.
Yeah, yeah. You never needed a vaccinated staff for customers to be protected against COVID, he explained. The marginal benefit to customers from having a 100% vaccinated staff was effectively zero as far as COVID risk was concerned. Despite little to no medical basis for the mandate, the policy debate unraveled into a polarized slugfest with opponents publicly branded as dangerous to society.
That just shows how brainwashed some people can be.
Yeah, yeah. Pfizer, as I have reported, secretly funded many of the public health organizations and nonprofits that lobbied for the mandate, referring to the article we just read. Meanwhile, critics of the policy were sidelined. In one of the Twitter file series I reported, Bio, the lobbying group for Pfizer and Moderna, financed a disinformation organization that pressured Twitter to ban mandate skeptics. Internal logs from Twitter's databases, first reported by journalist Barry Weiss, also showed that Bhattacharya faced a shadow ban limiting his reach. The involvement of Flashpoint, which advertises its work undermining political activists on behalf of client interests, has raised alarm. For decades, security contractors have assisted law enforcement and corporate interests seeking to track and destabilize grassroots political activists. Joshua Yoder, president of U.S. Freedom Flyers, reacted with concern over Flashpoint probing the private jet groups associated with his group. It's very difficult to screen everyone in the private Telegram group, said Yoder. You really can't screen every person coming in unless you spend an extraordinary amount of time doing that. Flashpoint marketing materials make clear that the firm has previously worked to provide deep surveillance of a variety of other political activists, including anti-pollution demonstrators, people protesting the construction of a pipeline, and left-wing groups that rallied outside of the 27 G20 trade summit in Hamburg, Germany. In its investigation, Flashpoint notes on its brochure that the company provides an analysis assessing tactics, techniques, and procedures of activist groups, providing clients with strategic upper hand when confronted. Well, there's more to this article, but we have to stop it here. We're about out of time. But again, this really underscores the point that the FBI is doing spying. It's engaged in domestic spying, and it is doing it through these contractors, and it is doing it with an agenda that has absolutely nothing to do with what should be its core function of making the nation safer and protecting us from actual criminal activity, not political advocacy. But that's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.